You're listening to Rust Belt Running.
Running is what makes me realize that, like, I'm a human being who is worth something.
That is not a good measurement of my value as a human.
We get between 8 and 10,000 additional comments, and I read every one of them.
So you had to run Sand Run for your first. You become race director and take it out.
it's got to be old guy naked in the locker room.
I get to spend time with my friend Adam. I get to do something with my friend.
Right now, I'm not thinking much beyond what I'm going to be drinking next week at this time.
Coleslaw on a taco is not taco, it's barbecue.
And so we'll be discussing tonight with some occasional swear words from Andrew because he's upset, and that's okay.
I know him as the biggest Kid Rock fan around.
You ran that.
Oh, dear God.
You're listening to Rust Belt Running. I'm Adam Wheeler. You can find me on social media at WheelsUpInCLE. Joined, as I always am, by Andrew Hedinger. You can find him on social media at AndrewRunsALot. If you want to find the podcast on social media, you can find us at Rust Belt Running.
Before we go any further, let's take a quick break to tell you a little bit about what we do with run coaching. Adam, why don't you tell us about it?
It's personalized run coaching. It takes into account the schedule that you have to get your runs in, the goals that you have, as well as the base that you come to us with. You talk to us about what it is you want to be doing, the time that you have to do it, and we come up with a personalized plan that fits your needs, works on you towards your goals, and helps provide a bird's eye view on your training to make sure that you don't plateau, to make sure that you're doing the correct training that's appropriate for you, and to get you showing up on race day confidence that you're going to be ready to hit your race goals.
So to learn more about how we can help you hit your race goals, go to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can find out about our different levels and coaching, find out more about us as runners and coaches, or you can support the show with buying merch, a sweatshirt, a patch that you can iron on to your singlet for that race that you're running soon. Maybe you don't want people knowing that you listen to us, but regardless, support the show. But for now, sit back and enjoy the rest of this episode.
Andrew, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. We were just talking beforehand about how it was kind of a rough week in running, but other than that, I'm all right. I'm doing better than Philadelphia Eagles fans are. You and I have disagreements. I tend to agree with the guy who committed the penalty.
Once he came out and said that, I was like, all right. When a guy comes out and is willing to admit that even if it was soft, that it was a penalty, it's like, all right, well, if the guy admits that he did wrong.
I mean, it was. I mean, I texted you that. It sucked. It was a terrible ending to that game. That was a phenomenal game. Could have gone down as one of the best, and it was such a dud ending. But it was a penalty. It was a weak one, but it was one. And that, I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, it is a penalty and it sucks. Like, I hate the notion of let them play, because at some point, like, you're having the exact opposite effect on the game,
right?
Where it's like, you can just do whatever the hell you want.
Right.
So I don't understand what let them play means. Let them play without rules. Like, that seems to be what people want, because it was definitely a hold. I'm going to get crucified over this one.
Well, in the moment, I will readily admit that part of my hating the call was that my mind was already fast forwarding to, okay, situational football, 1:48 left. I think Philadelphia had maybe one timeout left. Like, there's enough time for a drive. All they need to do is get within field goal range, maybe overtime. Like, I had already jumped ahead to what I expected for the last 1:48 of what had already been an epic game. So when the penalty got called, it was like this balloon deflating and this recognition of, oh, that's just not going to happen. Kansas City's going to milk the clock. We're going to get 1:48 of kneeling down, and then there's going to be a field goal with 10 seconds left. And
and what the hell is Jalen Hurts doing on that? It looked like, honestly, since there was no pass rush, he thought the play got blown dead or something. Because he just didn't do anything for like 5 seconds. And it was like, oh, shit, I got to throw this ball down the field. And everybody was way out of his range. Yeah. That was such a good game.
It was.
To end the way it did sucked, even if it was, I mean, I don't love the I want to go back. I don't love the flag. I wish it would not have been thrown,
right.
But it was a penalty. It didn't have to be called because it was so soft, but
yeah.
It was. But I think, like, when you even look at the Patrick Mahomes throw, I think he recognized it and threw the ball safely yes. away and towards Smith-Schuster to draw attention to it.
Yes.
So I think it was more egregious than I think maybe the camera angle we all saw showed, because it was on the front half of his body. We saw it from the backside. So I don't know. What a dud ending to a great, great game.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's no horse in the race. So
I think it's the best way to watch a Super Bowl. Of course, I'm speaking.
I do too. As a Falcons fan, I absolutely agree. It is best to not have a horse in the race.
As a Browns fan who has not had a team get to a championship game since it was renamed the Super Bowl, that's one of my big pet peeves, by the way, about the NFL, is that they just don't count any history at all before the game was called the Super Bowl, which drives me nuts.
Merger. It was the AFL-NFL merger. That
I get
was
it.
The...
But, like, baseball expanded teams, and they don't go like, oh, well, it wasn't this current iteration of the league, so I guess we can't count championships before 1993.
Well, no, I mean, I think they, like, if you go to the Hall of Fame, the Browns NFL championship is recognized.
Right.
You just don't call it a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but when the NFL talks about championships, they only talk about Super Bowl championships. They do not talk about NFL championships, and that's what bugs me. I think it's a weird thing, because leagues contract and expand all the time. The NBA merged with the ABA, and the NBA doesn't be like, oh, well, those championships before then don't count. There's just NBA champions.
I don't know. The Falcons have neither, so it is what it is. Yeah. Well, let's talk about running. I don't want to talk about sports.
That's fine.
I don't want to talk about championships that our teams can't win. So, rough week of running here. We were talking about it, and then I was like, hey, we need to hit record because this is good stuff.
Yeah.
We do want to talk a little bit later about, like, we're getting into the season of dress rehearsals.
Yeah.
Really trying to get yourself ready for race day. And mm-hmm. what does that look like in your workouts, especially your long runs? And what are some of the, kind of ideas that you and I have that we, use ourselves and give to our athletes to use? We're going to get into that. But, just talking about some of my running, and I think this goes in line, too, with what you had posted on our social media on Friday. And quick side note, I want to shout out Adam, because I did almost everything on our social media for a long time. And Adam has really, over the past 3 to 4 months, taken a lead on that. And I really, really appreciate it. And it's been very, very good. And he's really been giving people knowledge and allows me to continue to just be the silly guy who does the podcast stuff. So I just had to, drop that in there real quick.
Thanks, bud. No, you did. You carried the water on that, because I do not naturally like bringing attention to myself. It's I'm the worst marketing person for social media.
I'm the second worst.
Well, so in the context of this dynamic, you far outstripped me on that. You're so much better at it than I am. But what is nice is I think we've kind of found in the last year that coaching has brought a lot of focus for us in a number of areas with, the podcast and with social media. And what the whole coaching thing does for me is it really falls into my love of teaching. And so it's been nice to bring that to our social media. And there's just so much information and knowledge that's out there that is really valuable for people, stuff that you and I have really found out the hard way over the years. And so just trying to drop some things in there every now and then for people to pick up on that they can use in their own training and also come to understand what we offer has been a lot of fun. So thank you for the shout out, but it's been nice to kind of start to stretch the teaching legs again there with social media. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's been good to see it. And like, I'll just be going through my day and I'll get notifications. Somebody liked your reel. And I'm like, what the hell did we post? So, but yeah, you were, you talked about, I'm just going to read your post. It was a simple little two slide, recovery tip. How you talk to yourself is a key in growing as a runner and as a person. A key to recovery, especially if it is following a bad workout, is a self-talk you use. Positive self-talk, such as framing the workout as a learning experience, promotes the growth mindset. Negative self-talk, on the other hand, triggers the release of stress hormones and promotes the idea that poor workouts are stressful events that are to be avoided in the future. Like, yeah. So I had some rough workouts this week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know there's some circumstances around it. I've been kind of off and on sick, and that means off and on training.
Right.
But, you know, it's really tough because I was just trying to run some race pace stuff.
Yeah.
Like race pace that I'm supposed to run for like six times the distance in.
Right.
In just over 2 months. And I'm struggling with it. Like I'm struggling to run race pace over a 1200 meter distance on Wednesday. I'm like, what on earth? Like I know, and that's where it's real easy to fall down some, you know, some of those rabbit holes of anxiety and stress. And, I'm struggling with it, and I'm trying to, you know, I use the term give yourself grace. I'm trying to give myself grace as best I can, knowing in the reality of it is starting and stopping training is difficult. It's difficult because I don't know where I'm at. Like I've had to take like 10 days off twice in the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have a great barometer of where my fitness is post Columbus and lots of alcohol. Like I don't know where exactly I stand. So I'm still figuring that out. And this just wasn't the week to start trying to drop the hammer on some of those miles yet. And right. I know that. So like when you're talking about self-talk, like after a workout like that, like what's some of what you're talking about when you wrote that, like what are you kind of thinking? Like with yourself when you have a week like this or workouts like that?
So I think a lot of it starts with being able to step back, kind of zoom out a little bit and look at the overall context of what's going on, you know, much like you just did, you know, talking about how you've been sick and talking about how you've been starting and stopping. There's reasons for why your runs aren't going the way that they are. And I think a mistake that more inexperienced runners make is looking at every workout as being like, this is the workout where I've got to prove my fitness to myself. Like if I don't run the way that I want to, it shows that I'm not as fit as I want to be. And really, like, there's only one prove it workout, and that's the races we train for. You know, that's really where you empty the tank and go all out. You know, maybe a couple of times in training, you might highlight like one specific workout or two specific workouts where, you know, you're going to really go to the well and just see what you've got, kind of, you know, test that fitness a little bit. But overall, workouts are designed to simply be another brick in the wall that you're building over the course of training. You're not supposed to look at those and say, this is like showing exactly where I'm at. And so it's that ability to zoom out and say, okay, today didn't go well, and then be kind about it. That doesn't mean that I'm not fit. I ran good workouts last week, and it's impossible for you to run faster than you're physically capable of running. So if you've run good workouts and then you have a bad one, well, it doesn't mean you've lost fitness.
Right.
So it's recognizing that bad days happen. If we have bad days at work, why wouldn't we assume that we have bad days running? So it's kind of that. It's trying to bring the temperature down as I zoom out a little bit, bring the temperature down, get out of freak out mode, and then just recognize that I've been through this before. I like to use previous examples for my training before. Hey, you went through a stretch like this a year ago, and it was a couple of rough days, and you got back through it, and you're going to grow from this. Like, you're going to come through this, you're going to get back, and you're going to have a workout here coming up soon where you get back to where you want to be, and you'll be okay.
Right.
And it's allowing for that bit of uncertainty, but not letting it rule how I feel about my training going forward.
Yeah, that's one thing I did on Thursday. I was doing Thursdays are my days that I come upstairs and I start working on my athletes' training plans. I try not to make it where I'm rushing through doing their stuff.
Yeah.
So that I can give them the best feedback possible. I try to keep some of the notes in their workouts lighthearted too. Like I always make silly at like, so Stephanie Rubel is one of our athletes and I made a comment on her rest day today. She's the reasons why I've gotten back into wrestling. And, today is February 18th, which is day of WWE Premier Event Elimination Chamber. So I made a silly comment about that on her rest day, that she needs to watch Sami Zayn take Roman Reigns' title. Roman Reigns is like her favorite wrestler. So it's just like to make little things like that. And if I do it on Thursdays, I feel like I have more time to like have fun with that. But I also, none of that is relevant to what I'm speaking about. But I was like, I need to go back and look, what was I doing at the track last year? Like,
right. Yeah.
When I started going back, like I got to look at myself right now, like I did in April and May of last year. Like it was a very similar spring to like my February, March and April were very similar to what my November, December and January have been.
Right.
I got to find that parallel. And Wednesday I went and I was going to do 1200 repeats. I go back and I look at fitness that's probably equal-ish to where I am now. I was just doing a crap ton of 400s. Me and Nate Perez were just running really fast 400 circles around Norton High School's track. And I did that for like 3 months. And it's like, yeah, so let's, I want to improve over what I was doing then. I don't want to just get back where I was. But I have to look back a little bit and go, when I was here, where I'm at now, yeah, I'm doing more or I'm trying to do more than I was a year
ago.
So I do think that's the wonderful thing about, technology. For those of us who aren't like you, who can manually log our workouts. I have such a good memory. I can remember. Like I can pull it up on Koros and I can be like, I do remember that workout. Like when I see it,
that too.
Something clicks.
Yeah.
And just good to go back and see that, hey, dude, you weren't blasting, like 4:30, 1200s last year. So
right.
Why are you thinking that's something you're going to do right now? Like you're not there. I'm still coughing from being sick. And it was windy as crap, and my allergies started bothering me because the temperature's been all over the freaking place. Like, so it's like, I'm not 100% as far as that goes. Of course, I'm behind where I was last year. So I got to give myself a race. So, yeah.
I'll give you an example of looking at running within the larger context from a workout that I did. This past Thursday, there actually might be a reel coming out about this weekend.
Ooh.
So I don't want to give away.
Sign me up for an Adam selfie reel.
Yeah. So I part of the work that I've been doing for Boston, because Boston is so hill dominant, has been more race paced work on hills. Everything that I've read about racing Boston talks about how you've got to get really good specifically at racing downhills. And previously when I've run hilly races like Pittsburgh, I would do a lot of long runs on hills, but I wouldn't do a lot of race pace specific work. And that's been probably the one big shift that I've made this time around. So I did a workout on Thursday. It was the first time I've ever done this specific workout. And I had 8 race pace miles planned. And the idea of the workout was to run 3 miles, mostly uphill at race pace or race effort. And then run a shorter stretch of a steeper hill and basically continuous 400 meters up, 400 meters down at race pace. I did 4 of those. So that ended up being 2 miles. And then run 3 miles back going downhill at race pace. There's a great spot in Bedford for me to do this that I've found from previous runs. So I went out and I did that. Now, it's not like, it's still a bit of a rolling course, so it wasn't like I had 3 miles of exactly straight uphill, but it was uphill gain, and there weren't like huge climbs in between, but it was still rolling. And when I did the workout, as soon as I started, I'm running those first couple of uphill miles, and I'm realizing as I'm doing it, like, there's no way I'm going to hit the paces that I had planned. I've never done this workout before. I thought I had appropriate paces planned. No, Adam, you've failed miserably at that. So immediately mid-run, I had to go from, okay, you've got to remove from your head this idea of that the pace matters. You have to start working instead on the skill of, in a race, you want to run fast and relaxed. So get the pace out of your head, find your form, relax, and just simply see how it goes. Simply see how that plays out, because that's really the skill you're building for race day. It's not necessarily the ability to hit an arbitrary pace, because in any race, paces are going to, they're going to shift, they're going to change. You never run one consistent pace for 26.2 miles. And especially on a course like Boston, where the topography changes all the time.
Right.
Once I got into that mindset, the rest of the workout went great. When I finished up doing the 3 downhill miles, I largely was able to hit the paces that I projected. But even then, I was off a little bit because the course rolls, and I just couldn't quite get into that consistent, like, 640-mile rhythm. But by the time I finished the run, I was able to look back and say, you worked and you worked and you really were able to nail working on that skill of running fast and relaxed and just letting the pace come to you as opposed to forcing it. Right. And that was one of those things that, because it was this new workout, I could have gotten really caught up in my head of, oh my God, you're off of what you're supposed to be doing. This isn't what you had written down on paper. And, you know, we've all had that happen in a race. You're running a race, you want to hit a certain pace, and all of a sudden, like, the wheels come off, or you're not where you want to be. You have to take a mad dash to a porta potty. It's like, how do you get through those moments and come back down and say, okay, what am I supposed to be doing right now? Because you can have the mental freak out about where you want to be or what you think you're supposed to be doing. But a race-specific goal is the ability to get through that little bit of panic and just settle back into what you're actually supposed to be doing, which is just putting one foot in front of the other as relaxed as you can and letting the race come to you. And so it was that mid sort of run ability to work on that skill that I think is really what I was building on Thursday, not so much race pace mileage.
Well, and you're segueing us perfectly into,
you like that.
That was very well done. And I couldn't help but think over and over again about, you know, like, things don't go your way on race day sometimes. And I was a perfect example of that in the fall. And But some of that self-talk, that positivity, really helped me. I cannot believe, I'm so glad I had to make a porta potty stop in Akron. It's so crazy. So as we transition to dress rehearsals, it's so crazy that happening at Akron is probably one of the top 2 or 3 reasons why I was so successful at Columbus. Mm-hmm. Because it kept me from, when I realized I had to go to the bathroom in Columbus, it kept me from freaking out there. I was like, I can recover. I can recover from this and go out and, you know, I know how to catch up to my people and I'll be okay. But, you know, it also kind of let me start the race. I was actually talking to Matt Martin about this when we were at the track on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. About how the one thing I'm so proud of with Columbus that I don't think I had really even thought about much was that I even went for it. Like, I had such a weird 24 to 36 hours before that race.
Yeah.
where I was not eating. I was going to the bathroom nonstop. Had no idea what I was going to be able to show up with. And I so easily, and I thought about it, like, I really did. I was like, I might just have to coast this because I'm going to be lucky to finish.
Right.
But I decided, no, I'm going to go for it. I mean, it's easy to say I'm going to go for it when Thunderstruck hits. I made the decision to go for it, and it paid off. And that's, you know, that's something I'm very proud of myself for doing was I'm going to go for it. Yeah. I might've only had a small thing of pasta and like two bananas and a crap ton of scratch the day before.
Right.
But I trained for this. Let's go. And I know what happened to Akron. And as long as it doesn't happen numerous times, I should be okay. So you can't necessarily dress rehearsal a porta potty stop because, I mean, unless you're taking a laxative before you run or something, that is not recommended. We want to get into dress rehearsals because it's, you know, it's about that time of year to start getting ready for races in April and May. And, you know, in the coming weeks, you're, you know, hopefully going to have runs that are going to really try to mimic a race. So what is a dress rehearsal, Adam? And why do you think they're important? Like we actually have in our work, in our workout library that we prescribe our athletes, we have one listed marathon dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
What is it? Why is it important?
Dress rehearsal is really a run where you try to mimic as much as you can what race day is going to look like. And you know, you can make this as specific as possible down to getting up as early as you can to kind of get a feel for what the time is going to be like on race day. You know, setting out the different times between like when are you going to eat breakfast? You try to eat the breakfast you would eat on race day. Try to have as much time between that breakfast and when you would actually be starting the race go through. So you get an idea of like, is this enough fuel? Do I feel like it's sitting okay on my stomach? Running a course that mimics as best as it can the race you're going to be running, carrying the fuel that you think you're going to need to get through that race so you can practice fueling and practice fueling on the run fast. You know, some people might do a dress rehearsal where it's just a long run without specific pace goals. Our dress rehearsal for the marathon, it depends on what mileage the runner would be at. But I know when I prescribed it for JP last year, I think it was a 22-mile run. It was 10 miles. It's sort of the faster range of his easy pace. And then it was 10 miles at his goal race pace and then probably two cool down miles afterwards. And the idea there was to really get him feeling what it was going to be like to run race pace on tired legs late in a race. And I had him do that specifically. He was able to do it on the Akron course because he lives right near the Akron course. So he was able to really go through and see what running sand run on tired legs was going to feel like. So it wasn't a shock to his system when he then did it at the Akron Marathon. And what's great is if you look at his splits, man, he crushed the sand run parkway on race day. Not an easy thing to do at Akron. So it is really, at its most basic, it is a run or a couple of runs that really try to mimic as closely as possible the conditions and timing of your race.
Yeah, you hit something practicing fueling. Something that I did at Columbus last year that I had never done before, and this is being a major Megan Featherston stan, I carried a water bottle for the first half of the race. I think that's something that we need to get away from the like stigma of it.
Yeah.
For a lot, if it's something that gives you an edge and an advantage and you have a, you know, superior hydration drink to Gatorade or whatever is on the course, whether it be Scratch or Tailwind or Liquid IV, whatever it may be. I think that that's something that you can use. Other than that, I do think it's important if you're going to be drinking cups on the course, find a way to even practice that. Because that can be difficult if you don't know how to do it. I fortunately can chug. So it's not, you'll see when we go to the Cavs game next month. I can down it. You know, so it's never really been an issue for me. But, you know, I think that if, you know, depending on what your course is, if you can set up a table, you know, if you're doing loops at a park or something, if you can set up paper cups to drink out of on the run, because I think when you're talking about mimicking things, you want to mimic everything you can.
Yeah.
You don't want to stop to take fuel. You're not going to do that on race day. I mean, if it's part of your plan because you're that's what you and your coach devised for you, then okay. But if you're going out to, you know, qualify for Boston, run sub 3, that's probably not in your plan. If it's not in your plan, don't be doing it. I think, you know, the little thing you and I brought up was, you know, on your route, try to avoid crossing streets. You know, there's little things like that. You don't want to get stuck at a crosswalk for 3 minutes waiting for traffic. You know, because keeping the stop time to an absolute minimum is of utmost importance. And we all love taking pictures. No, it's your dress rehearsal. You have people on the course taking pictures of you, not the other way around.
Well, and I think like an important thing to bring up there is that, you know, there's when you run as much as we do training, there might be times where that's appropriate to do. You're out for an easy run and you got your phone with you because you're listening to music and you see something pretty. Sure, stop and take a picture. But that's where there are also specific runs, and I would say pretty much any type of run where there's some sort of distance or pace goal involved are really runs where you're working on some sort of physical and mental skill. And that's where you want to keep the stops to a minimum, because part of what you're working on there is building the skill of finding a way to power through when your body is telling you it doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And there's always in training a fine line with that. But I mean, that happens a lot on race day where you go into dark places and, you know, Steve Magnus talks about this in Do Hard Things. He talks about with his athletes, like, you need to go to a bad place. You need to train yourself to go to a bad place. You know, go out and run a series of intervals where you run the first few intervals way faster than it intended, to where your body's going, dude, I don't know if I can do this. Because you're going to have a race where that happens at some point. So if you intentionally train yourself to go to a bad place and then work through how to get out of that, you're going to be able to do that on race day when it happens to you. And if in training you've got an 18-mile run and at mile 10, you're like, ooh, something pretty, I'll stop. And you give yourself that 5-minute break. That's a 5-minute rest that doesn't mimic what happens to you on race day.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're training your body like, no, it's cool. We're going to hang out for a little bit. We'll calm down. We'll get back to it. And, you know, just those little things add up. You really want to try to pack as much learning as you can into some of these runs, especially a dress rehearsal. So that's something you want to keep to a minimum.
Let's see, what else do we got on here? We hit a lot of this already. I really do like it. I don't think there's a ton to talk about when it comes to this, except for the importance of it. But that hydration and nutrition, be practicing that. I brought up one of our athletes who, you know, that's kind of our primary focus is that nutrition piece.
Yeah.
You can't wait until race day to practice that. No. You really can't wait until your dress rehearsal to practice that. You need to be getting that in regularly. Again, it's one of those things I think that there's like a stigma around. I don't know if it's like a machismo thing. I used to kind of struggle with it where I didn't feel properly. And it has to be all it is just this macho thing about like running without fuel, which is stupid. But these things need to be dialed in, not. Oh, and if it makes your workout higher quality, I don't understand why you wouldn't want it in the first place.
But well, higher quality is what you're looking for. That's how you get more fit.
Yeah, you don't get more fit by depleting your body and running like a trash bag. Like you get higher quality by, you know, like you don't want to feel amazing all the time, but because you might not be pushing yourself hard enough, but you don't want to feel, you know, if you feel like complete garbage during every run, then you have an issue. And if you feel like garbage during your long runs because you're not fueling right, I guarantee you I know what's going to happen on race day.
Yeah.
Miles 18 through 26 are going to be brutal. Miles 9 through 13 are going to be brutal.
Yeah.
because you are want to be like cooler than everybody else and not fuel properly. I don't quite understand that. That's something to dial in before your dress rehearsal, but practice your timing of your fuel, whether it's gels, chews, scratch, whatever. Dial that in and have that practice to a science as best you can. You know, even our friend Erica, she's freaking out about everything Tokyo right now.
There's a lot logistically there to walk through. It's nuts.
And, but you know, she messaged us freaking out about water stops. And you know, it's like, but even that, like, understand what the race is offering you and yeah. what the frequency might be. If the race is offering you water stops every 2 miles, don't be taking on fuel every mile or like
right.
on an odd number. Like, try to take on fuel if you're not carrying. If you're carrying during the race, who cares? You're in yeah. control of your own destiny. But, you know, like mimicking every, like all those things on the race course that you can. I think that's important. So, this is not as long as our phone call about this the other day.
That's all right. I've got a couple of thoughts on the,
good.
On the nutrition part. And I brought this up when we were talking about this the other day. One, I know specifically thinking about myself as a runner and how my approach to nutrition evolved. My first experience with race day nutrition was the 2011 Cleveland Marathon. I ran the half marathon, and in Cleveland, I think they give out gels at two spots on the course. One was at like mile 9, and the other one was probably at mile 18. And being a novice runner with absolutely no idea what I was doing, when I started thinking forward, I was like, well, if this race is providing the gels at those intervals, that must be appropriate for what I would need. Right. And for the longest time, I thought that way. And it wasn't until, I don't even know when I really came to understand the need for more frequency, but it's only been probably in the last 4 or 5 years. I don't even think I went into my first marathon knowing I needed that much in 2016. So I think, you know, a lot of runners, that's probably their first experience with any sort of like race day nutrition, like supplementing with gels or anything like that, unless they know a more experienced runner. So I think that's part of what leads people to not supplement in the ways that they need to. I think the other thing is that this is something where looking at how many runners train themselves just using like a plan they find, like a one size fits all plan. And we've talked about why we don't think those are great for runners, because there's so many ways where a one size fits all plan doesn't fit runners and their lifestyles, but it doesn't talk about all these little supplementary things. I mean, even if you look at books, I think about the Hansen's book, they talk about the physiology of their planning, but they don't really right. talk too much about the actual race day logistics, some of the other stuff. And so unless you find some sort of podcast like ours or a book that actually gets into the nitty gritty of race day and what you specifically need to be worrying about and how training translates to that, you're going to get all the physiology and physical work that you need to do to train for race, but you're not necessarily going to get the, you know, the hydration, the nutrition, how often, why. That's really information that you have to go out and seek out for yourself. So that's another reason why having experienced coaches is really beneficial, because that's all stuff that coaches, if they're worth anything, know. And I think the last thing too, and it's interesting that you brought this up, because I just read, I think it was in Mario Frioli's newsletter. If people aren't familiar, Mario Frioli, he used to write for, it's now Podium Runner, but he used to be the managing editor of Competitor Magazine, which is a endurance-specific website and magazine. And I mean, he coaches clients. He has a podcast called The Morning Shakeout and a newsletter called The Morning Shakeout. And I think it was in his newsletter within the last month or so, he was talking about how one of the things he has specifically trained and practiced in the last year or so is hydrating and fueling more so that he's able to run on a stomach that feels fuller. And this is a mm-hmm. guy with a lot of experience. And this is a guy who runs, I think he runs like 240s in the marathon. This is a guy who knows right. what he's doing. And to read this experienced person who has had access to world-class athletes and world-class, you know, training techniques say, I'm just now learning how to, do this on a fuller stomach made me go, okay, like there's still a lot around this that isn't necessarily well understood.
I think it's a newer, within the last couple of years, I think it's a newer phenomenon in running, is that we're fueling appropriately.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps it's social media, and there's, to bring her up again, Megan Featherston, there's people like her who they're giving us better information on it. There's more information available, and there's more anecdotal information available too. I mean, I can speak for myself. When Columbus was the best fueled I'd ever been, despite all the GI issues I had the 36 hours before the race, it was the best fuel I was going into the race and during. I mean, between carrying and scratch, and I had an appropriate amount of gels, and I only missed one, and that was towards the end. But it was the first time I didn't feel nauseous at the end of a race.
Yeah.
And I put more fuel on, and I didn't feel nauseous. I mean, I've always had that thing where I was so hungry at the end of a race, but as soon as like the food I got or I would order wherever I went to eat got put in front of me, I'd take like two bites and I'm like, no, I'm good. That was every marathon experience I had. And then I would pack it up to go and I would eat it later. This, I went out, I got chimichangas at Chewy's in Columbus and slammed them. I mean, they didn't even have to wash the plate when I was done. And it was awesome. Like, what an experience. And that was an 11-minute PR. So it's not like it went out and coasted it. Like, it's amazing what fueling properly does. And this turned into a fueling episode, which is fine too. It's part of preparing for race. I think that's the number one thing to rehearse for race day. Is fueling and dial that in throughout your training. But yeah, I mean, to do it properly, it really does make a phenomenal, phenomenal difference. That the wall was much shorter and easier to climb over.
Yeah.
Being properly fueled. I mean, I fell off a little bit. And just as you did in Pittsburgh, you fell off a little bit. You and me had such similar races. Yours was 3 minutes faster, but it was the same type of thing where like after mile 20, that like A goal just kind of slowly, it's like when you would play Mario Kart and you were racing against the ghost and you were right on with it every lap.
Right.
And then like you would, the last lap, for whatever reason, he was just a little bit faster and you couldn't quite break the record. You know, it's that same thing where it's like that angle just slowly gets away from you. But it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm dead. I'm walking it in for the last 5 miles. Like there was none of that for either one of us.
Right.
And I 100% attribute that to appropriate fueling. As well as the training that went into it, but I mean, the fueling was the greatest change that I had made.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh really was a learning experience for me as far as fueling goes, because that day was so much warmer and so much more humid than it was supposed to be even like 3 or 2 days prior. The amount of change that forecast went through in 5 days was crazy. Where it ended up being, I think when I finished, it was roughly 70 degrees and it had poured on us. So it was incredibly humid. Mm. And my stomach just does not handle fueling at that sort of humidity. And in the past, what I've tended to do is space my fuel intake out over the entirety of the race. And what I will probably do at Boston is instead cram pretty much everything that I'm taking into maybe the first 16 miles so that I get everything on board before things get really hard in Newton and Heartbreak Hill. Because I think at that point, it's just from the intensity, it's going to be hard for me to take on much more fuel, but I'm going to have taken on everything I feel I need to get through the race. at a point where my stomach is more easily able to digest it. So it's not like I'm going to cram like a gel every 2 miles or so, but maybe instead of spacing it out like 5 miles, 10 miles, 15, 20, it might be more like 3.5, 7, 10, 13.5, 16 or so.
I think I did, I think I did four, eight, 12. All right, I did 4.5.
Okay.
I did every 4.5 miles was what I did at Columbus, because that ended up being about 30, I think 31 minutes. But it was like a nice, it was like a nice round mileage number for me to get to. Yeah. I didn't want to do like 4.46 or whatever it would have been. It was like, yeah, 4.5 was like perfect. So at your pace, yeah, you're probably like 4.25 to do that.
Yeah.
And then care, and but still have that gel ready for when you get through Newton. Your body, your body's going to probably want it. It might be hard to get it down. And you don't have to take the full thing either.
Well, and that's where, yeah, you're right. This did really become a fueling episode. but this is where you and I, you know, science and sport, if you guys want to sponsor us.
You should.
We would love to have you guys sponsor us, because we are absolutely in love with your product, and we pitch it to all of our clients and we pitch it on our account. So science and sport, get in touch with us. But no, you and I have both discovered science and sport, and what we've discovered with it is that it goes down pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sit heavy on our stomachs. And yeah, you can take it over a longer period of time to where you don't need water, because it's an isotonic solution. It's got the consistency of like unsettled jello. And that helps, because you can take little sips and you don't have to wait for water stops. You don't have to wait for hydration. That was, I used Goo for the longest time, and God, that would sit so heavy on my stomach if I didn't have any water. And I think the Towpath marathon that I left, ended up being the last race that I did that. Cause I remember just taking some of that stuff and just, it was so damn sweet. It was almost nauseating to me. You brought up one other thing I'll bring up with fueling, and then we can move on from it. Talking about it, it's funny because you talk about not being really properly fueled before Columbus because of getting sick. I ran 17 miles. It'll be like 10 or 11 days ago at the time this podcast is published, but it was the day of the Super Bowl. I ran 17 miles in Hinckley, and there's a 3 mile loop around Hinckley Lake that is very much rolling hills. There's like 3 major climbs on that hill, on that course. And I had gotten sick. So that was a Sunday. I'd gotten sick the Friday night before, like sick, threw up. Sorry, guys. So basically didn't really have anything on my stomach after a very long, and I worked 11 and a half hours that day. So I had basically nothing on my stomach to recover from that day of work. Felt fine. I think I just ate something that didn't agree with me. There was no other symptoms or anything like that. Felt fine. Ate normal on Saturday. But still felt like going into that Sunday, like, man, to run 17 miles after this chaotic weekend of work, I don't feel like I've got enough food in my stomach. I really ran that entire run waiting for the wheels to fall off. But what I did do is I fueled properly during the run.
Mm-hmm.
I got my 4 gels down at the intervals that I wanted to get them in. And I mean, I ran 720 average miles, and I didn't have any sort of major drop off one way or the other. I was within, I think, 10 seconds per mile of every mile there. And I fully believe it's because I fueled properly. I fueled and I hydrated.
Well, and I think too, again, yeah, this is a nutrition episode. If you, you know, if you're focusing on, if that is a focus, you know, not just the day or two before your long run, if it is just becomes part of your training lifestyle, you know, how you are fueling meal to meal, snack to snack, you know, during your runs, after your runs, if you're doing that properly, you know, during the entirety of your training, you can have a day like you had. Mm-hmm. Like I'm looking at, I pulled out my notebook because I was going to make notes in it, but I happened to have, I was doing the math on my carbo load.
Okay.
And I had, that, but like the amount, I did this for 2 days. I had 4 61 carb New York bagels. I had 14 blackberry, or wait, I don't know how many blackberries I had. That was how many carbs was in a serving. I didn't list the amount of blackberries. But I had bottles of scratch. I had a naked juice. That may have been what did it. I don't know. I think that
that's what Sam Smith said.
But I mean, the quantity does not equal the quantity of the naked juice. But then I had my Rice Krispie treats, tart cherry juice, large banana, spaghetti, potatoes, and non-alcoholic brew dogs. But I focused on that so diligently for 2 of the 3 days before the race.
Yeah.
I didn't just try to do everything the day before.
No,
just like, can't. You know, you just like you don't in your nutrition lifestyle, you don't mm-hmm. just go, oh, I have a long run in 2 days. I guess I'll start eating healthy today or I'll right. start making sure I'm eating appropriately. Like, no, it's part of your training lifestyle that mm-hmm. you're going to, you know, not every meal, but by and large, you're going to, you know, get the fuel in your body that it needs. So when things aren't perfect for a day, guess what? You're not too far behind.
Right.
You can still go out and get a quality run in.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that I'm glad that I have. It gets boring sometimes. You know, I eat a lot of the same. I mean, my lunch yes. is the same every day, which is yeah. really freaking boring. But it's, you know, it's just kind of part of what I do. I mean, my dinner is the only meal, the only like thing I put in my face that really changes day to day. I eat 2 eggs and toast and fruit every morning. Mm-hmm. And then I eat steak, potatoes, and broccoli and a Greek yogurt for lunch every day.
Dinner's and then where the variety comes in.
And even that is, I mean, what's ready? What did I dinner prep this week? Because we usually right. have something prepped for dinner for the week. And sometimes it's just, I'm going to eat Chipotle.
Man, they're sometimes Chipotle after a hard run. There's nothing like just crushing Chipotle.
Girl, yeah. Especially if you're like getting back, like if you're driving back from a run or like yep. back from the gym and you're like, I don't want to make anything. I'm just going to stop at Chipotle and mm-hmm. oh yeah, it's got everything you need too. High carb, high sodium, high protein, put it right in my face hole.
It'll be gone in 10 minutes.
Oh, not even. Yeah, 10 minutes for you, you slow ass.
I really am the world's slowest eater.
You eat like Angela from The Office.
Well, so, you know, when we were talking with Mark Freeman on our last episode, and we started out with the Malaysian buffet, and he asked us, like, how our eating habits revolve around our running. And I told him something very similar to what you just talked about, how your, you know, my breakfast is exactly the same. It's always oatmeal and some sort of fruit. Post run, it's always some sort of protein smoothie. Part of that is that I seem to have a very sensitive stomach, especially on days where I go really, really hard, where if I, one, don't start with something like a protein smoothie, if I try to do more solid foods, like I can get a really upset stomach. And two is that even after I do that, if I've gone to the well for a run and I try to eat too fast, like it's just bad news for me. Mm-hmm. I think just over time, I've kind of learned that I unfortunately just have to be a slow eater. Every now and then you'll catch me at the right time and I will crush something, but those times are very rare.
They are. I've never seen it.
I know.
I mean, you and I have gone out to eat and I've many been times. Like, I've been done like clean plate for like 10 minutes and yes. I'm sitting there like, yes. dude, the cheese on your burger is hard again. Like, I mean, come on.
And I'm weird. I start and eat the side before I eat the main thing. I don't know why, but that's what I do.
That's when cheese, like, know, you've done I it with know. The burger. Like, you need the cheese to be hot.
I did it the other night. Oh,
my goodness.
I do want to talk about one last thing I wanted to talk about with dress rehearsals.
Yes.
And that is, it's a really good opportunity to not just practice pacing per se, but the feel of pacing,
mm-hmm.
because a pace is going to feel very different at mile 10 of a 20 mile run than it's going to feel at mile 19 of a 20 mile run. And one of the things I've discovered over time is that in moments late in a run where I feel like the wheels are falling off and mentally I want to freak out, I'll look at my watch and watch and be like, oh no, you're running like a 7:10 mile. Mm-hmm. You're good. I'm like, holy shit, this feels like an 8:30 mile. Right. And I've come to trust that my body is just simply able to power through despite feeling like absolute shit late in a race or in a long run. So that's again where, you know, we talked about not stopping and we talked about trying to mimic a race as much as possible. It's really, really good to get some good body awareness and feedback on what things are going to feel like at different parts of a run, because that will carry over into a race. You will have those late race freak out moments where the legs are so damn heavy and there's no way you can possibly get to the finish line. My God, I feel like I'm crawling. And you look at your watch and it's like, no, you're running race pace. You're exactly where you want to be. So getting that practice in, I think, is vital. It will prevent the freak out on race day.
Yeah. That's good stuff. I think, you know, we this turned into more of a nutrition episode than we wanted, but I think we hit a lot of good things. And I think going into having a prescribed dress rehearsal and going into that understanding, I'm going to do everything I can to replicate race day in the race feels from starting off slow and understanding that it's okay. To, you know, designing your route, to being conscious and aware of any breaks you're taking, you know, and even little things like maybe not stopping your watch if you do have to take a bathroom break. You know, you're not going to do that on race day.
Yeah.
I think just really looking at it like it's race day. You know, from the time it starts to, you know, you brought up the travel from, or the time between eating and bathroom breaks and before you start, the topography of the course, like there's so many different things to take into account. The apparel you're wearing, you know, I mean, wear the shoes you're going to wear, try to wear the clothes you're going to wear if they're available, you know, cause all these things make an impact. Yeah, I think it's important to have a day like that.
I'll finish on this note for myself. This is something, there's so much vanity in thinking about this, but this is a thought I've had about with Boston. So the science and sport packs are big. It's the one, I don't want to call it a drawback. It is.
I know where you're going with this.
It's a logistical challenge you have to figure out. And most running shorts that have the little gel pockets are, they're not designed for gels that big. I figured out a way to do it for Pittsburgh last year, but I'm not overly comfortable with how it worked out. Like, it's possible for those little gels to pop out of those pockets, and then you're screwed on race day. So one of the things I've been toying with is just getting, like, one of those little gel belt holders. And the part of me is saying, don't you?
I know, come on, load. Well, all right. My Google Photos isn't loading. Oh, here it is. So I did, cause I know what you're going to say. Cause I think I even said it on our, podcast. I didn't want my, like, cause I wear half tights and I did not want my, half tight pockets to be like bulging at the sides for photos.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I do remember this.
Like, because you don't want to look stupid in your photos. And I cannot stand it when like, especially, and you're right, especially for Boston. But here, I will show you. This is what my, I had, this would have been just at half. Because this is the infamous shocker photo.
Ah, yes.
But there is no, I don't have any ridiculous, gels in my pockets. I would have still had at half probably four science and sport gels on me. And you wear t-shirts, so it's going to fit a little looser probably too than a lot of running singlets would, but my singlet
singlets.
Do you? I thought you wore a t-shirt for some reason.
I did for the longest time, but I've started to wear singlets in the last 2 years or so.
Okay. All right. Well, color me stupid, I guess.
That's all right.
But yeah, I did the I got a pouch, the waist pouch that like they just all fit in. I didn't do the one that you like shove the gels in because
you can't with the weight. With those things being so big, you have to have them spread out because if you try to put them like with my shorts, I've got a pretty big back pocket that you can like fit your keys into. If you try to put more than a couple gels in there, it's like, it's almost like you're a kangaroo carrying on like the baby kangaroo in a pouch, but it's behind you and it's just like bobbing up and down the entire time you run. It is the most awkward feeling.
That's why, dude, get the, like, I'll send you a link to the, I think it was Amphipod was the brand that I used to carry all my gels. I think I did have to put one gel in each pocket. But that wasn't enough to look that one, they were the first I took. And two, they like, I think even one of them was like my pre-race gel. So I was like down to one in my side pocket. But yeah, like I didn't notice it in any race photos. I didn't notice the full pouch of gels. And in wearing it on the front, it didn't seem to bob up and down like at all. Okay. I never noticed I was wearing it. So yeah, I'll send it to you. Give it a shot.
Cool.
But that's something that you try for race day. Like you figure it out.
I think you
got to get that stuff out in now. Don't wait.
I had a different pair of shorts that I wanted to run for Pittsburgh or wear for Pittsburgh last year. And I ended up not wearing them because I went out on a race pace run and I packed the shorts full of as many gels as I knew I would need to carry on race day, even though I knew I wouldn't need them for that specific run. Mm-hmm. And I figured out midway through, like, this just isn't going to work. Like this pair of shorts is not designed to carry these kinds of gels. So, you know, that stuff sounds crazy, but it's like, those are the things you need to figure out because you don't want to wait until race day and then discover like you can't carry your nutrition.
Right. Yeah. Or like freaking out, how am I going to do this? And then you're stuck trying to figure something out at the expo and you don't even know if it's going to work. Like that's just not, that's not where you want to be. So, cool. This is good stuff, Adam. I'm glad we did this episode. Yeah.
Yes, I am too.
You know, we did good. I think we covered some good stuff as far as nutrition goes. We didn't talk too much about recovery and nutrition, but we don't got time to go into that. Just make sure you take protein after your workouts. Adam and I both do it. There's no reason that you should be doing anything different than that. This was good stuff. I look forward to seeing how our athletes dress rehearsals go. We do have some athlete races coming up in the next couple of weeks, which is pretty exciting. One of our athletes goes after her sixth star, which is gonna be awesome.
Erica.
So we're very much looking forward to that. Get closer to our spring races, it's time to think about your summer and fall training. So we can actually start taking marathon training seriously now because the weather's going to turn and we're going to be looking towards fall races and big PRs. So make sure you go to rustbeltrunning.com, link up with us. I'm going to try to get some different merchandise up on the website to get us ready for warmer weather too. Get us ready for races as well. So, but yeah, go there, check us out. Support the show or sign up for run coaching or just send us a message and say hi. Until we meet again, be sure to like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. And Adam, I will see you next. What's the run version of cuckolding, by the way? I'm curious. Because I'm getting ready to go out on a run with Matt Martin's wife, Steffi. And so.
Oh, that's legit?
It's legit. Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were just talking trash in the group that you're actually going out.
I was messaging. I was making sure to word it as
Oh, as man, that's fantastic.
like, I'm running with your wife at the muscle store. Like, I, and I'm glad that's how you read it, because I'm legit doing
100%. I was getting out of work and it was a busy day, so like my mental faculties were nowhere near that. And I was like, oh man, Andrew's just really going really in on this whole wife thing. That's legit. That's fantastic. I don't know. We'll have to come up with a word for that.
Oh, man. I'm glad it's the Martins, because I know I can make a joke about cuckolding. Yeah. So there we go. Yeah, we're going to figure that one out. We're going to name it. And yeah. So
I got
everybody...
12 miles of my own, so I'll think about that on my run.
All right. Sweet. Well, everybody, yeah, stay safe out there. Get your dress rehearsals in and enjoy those miles, everybody.